Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are myself, Garrett Wong, and my co-host, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil. How are you?
Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm okay. Let me just tell you, give you the 411.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I was supposed to fly a couple days ago, and I did fly a couple days ago from LA to Vegas. But that morning while eating breakfast, my crown broke off. Crown of my front tooth, the same tooth that I shattered many, many years ago skiing up in Mammoth Lakes, of which Mitch Schmelkenson, your attorney,
sent you
photos. Yes. So Mitch is my college fraternity brother. He is one of your entertainment attorneys, right?
He is my entertainment attorney. Yeah.
Okay, he's your entertainment attorney. He decided to send you some video and some pictures.
He sent me some photos of you in college on your ski trip.
God,
yes, he did.
That's the ski trip where it broke many, many, many moons ago.
Oh wow!
But they put a, you know, so it's been fixed, but when I was eating, it came off. So I was basically toothless when I flew.
No.
Yeah. And I had an emergency. The only person I could see
before.
Oh, it's the worst. I had an emergency appointment this morning with a local dentist that I've never met before because my dentist is in LA, and I had to find somebody out here in Vegas. And I've always said, I don't want to go to a doctor or a dentist in Vegas. I'll keep them in LA and I'll just keep going back to LA. But now that I'm here in Vegas, I needed to find somebody here. But it's funny because I kept wanting to say that I'm toothless in, like, sleepless in Seattle. I wanted to have a tea name, Toothless in Tampa. If I lived in a tea place, that would have worked better, right? Topeka, yes. Tampa, but in Vegas, there's no tea, no tooth word. Cinnamon is good too, but a synonym for the word tooth that begins with V, I don't think there is one.
Don't have one.
No,
I don't have
one. So it looks good though. It's back on.
It looks very good.
Yeah, but it's temporary because it fractured, it broke. They have to do a whole new one. And
that's what I did. I lost a crown in the back up in Vancouver. I was away from home. Same thing.
Yeah.
Had to go to a dentist there. Found a great dentist. So
oh,
it's going to work out. I believe it's going to work out for you.
Okay, good.
It's going to be good.
Good to know.
What are we watching this week?
Well, we're watching Favorite Son.
Oh, yes.
What did you call this? You said you looked it up and they called
the
this
Trilogy of Terror. Hmm. This is the last of three episodes that some fans refer to as the Trilogy of Terror, three horrible episodes of Star Trek Voyager. The first was Darkling first.
Yeah, Darkling, then Rise, then Favorite Son.
Then Favorite Son. That's the Trilogy of Terror to some fans. But even the Trilogy of Terror does not compete with the all-time worst episode, Threshold, which I hold the crown for that. So,
Well, I'm just going to say this. I'm going to say that term, the Trilogy of Terror, just sounds like a ride. Like a horror, you know, ride at some amusement park or something.
Yeah.
And I had never
heard of
that.
About to finish the ride. This is the last part of part three of our ride of terror.
All right.
I can't wait.
Yeah. All right, guys. Robbie and I are going to finish up the final episode in the Trilogy of Terror. And for those of you who are our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your segment, What Do We Remember? Hey, Robbie and I are back from watching Favorite Son.
Yes, we are. I feel a little uncomfortable.
Do you?
Yeah, I feel a little uncomfortable.
Okay, we'll get into it.
So, yes, we will.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about on this one.
So there's a lot to talk about. Written by Lisa Klink.
Yes.
Directed by Marvin Rush.
His second episode after
and both of them were big episodes for you.
Yeah, if you think about that.
Yeah.
The Thaw was the other one, and then this one. So yeah, Harry-centric episodes.
Yeah.
There you go.
Let's see. We had a bunch of guest stars, Carrie Shane.
Yes.
As Eliane.
Yeah. And did you notice how you just, there's really the only person who's introduced name-wise in the entire episode is Malia, the blonde, which is played by Kristanna Loken. Everyone else, the leader, the elder, the Teresian elder, she doesn't say her name. Her name is Lyris, right?
Lyris. Deborah May played Lyris. Right.
Carrie Shane, the main brunette, she plays Eliane, and she never says her name, or Eliane, however you pronounce it. And then the African-American actress, that's played by Rinna. That character's name is Rinna, played by Kelly Kirkland. And we don't hear her name either. We don't know anyone's names except for Malia that one time, and then Taman, the other male that's on that planet.
Let's talk about Taman for a minute. So Patrick Fabian, who played Taman, is a friend of mine. He actually... We became friends because, and I forgot he was in this episode, but I remember he was on our show. Back in the 90s, I did a Broadway show called 6 Degrees of Separation. And I was in the original cast of the Broadway production of 6 Degrees of Separation.
Yeah.
And then I left that show and I went out to LA. I did that play for almost a year or eight or 10 months. I can't remember. Anthony Rapp was in the cast. So I knew Anthony when he was I'm trying to remember how old Anthony was, 18, maybe 17, 18.
Very young. Anthony Rapp. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 6 Degrees of Separation. Anthony Rapp was in it. Sacher Channing played the lead role. It was a big role for me and a big job. Anyway.
Great play.
Mm-hmm. And I came out to LA and the first national tour was coming out. Mm. And it was starting in LA. So I went to see it at the Henry Fonda Theater and Patrick Fabian played my role in the first national tour of 6 Degrees of Separation.
You know what's funny?
It was funny when he and I had a moment. We had a couple of lines together.
Yes.
In a 50-50 there.
Yeah.
And I paused it for a minute. I was like, oh my God, he played the same role that I did in the broad, you know.
All right, don't get mad at me. But in that 50-50 shot, I was watching that and I thought, oh my God, Patrick Fabian could have been Tom Paris is what I thought at that moment.
That's
so funny. That exact moment. Height wise, you guys are about the same height, you know, you have the same blue eyes, you know, but very similar in stature and look, and you know what I'm saying? So there you go.
Patrick has remained an actor, unlike me. I became a director and a producer. So I don't keep my looks up quite the same way as some actors do. Although I'm very happy with my looks, but Patrick Fabian has stayed in, like he's evolved into a very handsome and chiseled older leading man. You know, he's gray-haired now.
Yeah, he is gray-haired. Yeah. Many, many years after Voyager was ended, and this is probably like about maybe 8 or 9 years ago, I was playing golf in Los Angeles, and I was a single. Typically, when you go to a golf course and you're single, they'll throw you with maybe a party of three that is not, you know, they're missing one person. Four people was the max for a round of golf. So I'm playing, and literally we get to probably like the 17th hole. So we're almost done with the round. And it's these three guys, they're very nice, you know, they're friends and they're kind of chatting and they're nice to me and we talk. On the 17th hole, this guy turns to me and says, oh my God, were you in Star Trek Voyager? And I said, oh my God, Taman is what I said, because I didn't even remember his name at the time. I forgot that it was Patrick, right? So, but I knew his character name, even though it was many years later. And so he didn't recognize me off the bat because my hair was long in a ponytail. I didn't recognize him because he's a silver fox now. His hair is all gray. He doesn't have all gray.
But super handsome guy.
Yeah, he's still a good looking guy.
Good looking guy. He's chiseled. But Patrick Fabian. He's still acting.
Yeah, he plays on Better Call Saul. He plays like the owner of a rival law firm on that. Mm-hmm. So I saw him on that one. But you know, the minute I reconnected with him, I can't tell you how many times I kept seeing him on TV going, there he is again, and there he is again. So
he works all the time. Yeah.
He's working quite a bit.
He's very talented and hardworking Yeah, great to see Patrick in this episode.
Yeah.
Another thing that came up for me because, as you said, they did not mention character names. And I kept going, there's so many actresses with characters that I don't know who is who. So I want to know their names so I can try and track that. Mm-hmm. So I went to Memory Alpha, which is a great resource for all details of Star Trek.
Correct.
To try to look at cast names. Mm. And as I was going down, I'm like, oh, there's some other people in there that I was surprised to see, like Sue was listed as a cast.
What?
Yeah, Sue was listed as a cast. Carrie, our one of our regular background and stand-in. Do you remember Carrie?
He
was listed as a security officer. Steve Carnahan, who was another regular background, was listed. Hmm. But the one that came up was Debbie David playing Lieutenant Russell. And I was like, Debbie David playing Lieutenant Russell? Who is that? So I clicked it and I look at the picture.
Yeah.
And it is Carl David Burks, who was my stand-in for a little while. He was also a regular, and he transitioned.
Yes.
Or he, you know, this was, I don't know the terms back then, but he became Debbie David. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, I've thought for years, what was that stand-in? Who was the stand-in? What was his name?
Right.
He was from Kentucky. I remember he shared a lot of things about himself.
I think we've talked about him, though, on Delta Flyers. We have talked about him.
His name is Carl David Burks.
Was her name, excuse me.
I apologize.
Get those pronouns correct.
Yes, let's get the pronouns correct.
Okay.
Her name was Carl David Burks. Mm-hmm. Her name is Debbie David.
Debbie David.
And it was a random thing that I saw all of these background and stand-ins, including Carl, or Debbie David, who had stood in for Tom Paris for a while.
Right. They're listed, but I didn't see Carl/Debbie in this episode. I didn't see Sue in this episode. I did see Carrie, because Carrie was sitting at your station and you weren't there. So that's
Carrie was sitting at my station at one point. I think Carrie took you off the bridge in that earlier scene.
No, that wasn't him. That was someone
else. When you were in sick bay, it was a different security officer. That was Steve Carnahan, who was also another regular.
I thought Steve was the guy that took me off the bridge and was waiting at sick bay.
Maybe I'm mixing it up because of the con.
Yeah.
Carrie was definitely at the con.
Yeah. He was at the
anyway,
con.
Anyway, it was just fun, cause it forced me to go and look at all the actors' names.
Yeah.
And stumbled upon, you know, just all these people that were a part of our crew, you know, our background, our regular background stand-ins, and getting Debbie David's old name, Carl, finally. I've forgotten that for years.
Right. And
I was happy to do that detective work.
And you did. You figured it out. Now you know. And since we're talking about all the guest stars, let's talk about the first appearance of Harry's mom, played by Irene Tu. Yeah. She's been around Hollywood since the 60s. Okay. She made her debut in Flower Drum Song in 1961.
Wow.
She was a spokeswoman for Chevron for a huge commercial campaign. Wow. And while she was shooting video, one of the commercials for Chevron in Miami, that's where Frank Sinatra met her and dated her for 2 years.
Oh my God.
It's insane. I'm just looking up all this stuff that she's done. And I was like, wow, I had no clue that she had done all of these things. And it was kind of shocking. And then I look at images and I'm sitting there going, now, wait a minute. She's in a movie with none other than.
I can't see. Who is that?
Elvis.
Oh my gosh. It's kind of broken up. Oh,
Hold on. Maybe I have a better shot from this one. Hold on.
She was in a movie with Elvis.
Yeah, this is called Paradise Hawaiian Style or something like that.
Wow.
That her and Elvis, right? Which is
Irene Sue. Did you talk with her?
I did. And she, you know what? She became my real estate agent. So when I bought my first house, she was my realtor. And so a couple of months ago, Irene Tu actually sent me her autobiography. It's called Watercolor Dream, The Many Lives of Irene Tu. So she has her autobiography because, like I said, she's done so many things. She's been in real estate. She's a Bikram yoga instructor. She still acts even to this day, you know, dated Sinatra. And I guess she was married to a Hungarian film director, Ivan Nagy. I mean, her life is just so filled.
I had no idea.
I had no clue at all. No.
That was one thing I loved about Star Trek is we'd get some of these actors that had just done such amazing things. And we'd just get to hear their stories and work with these people who had just really fascinating lives. So that's very cool. I had no idea.
Definitely. And since, you know, we're on the topic of guest stars, we might as well talk about Christopher Carroll, who plays Captain Albin, the Nassari captain, and he played a Cardassian in the third season of Deep Space Nine in the episode Second Skin. So a little bit of Star Trek on his resume before he did this one. And Kristanna Loken, who plays Malia, she went on to play the female Terminator in the Terminator film series. And then she did many, many, many other, you know, guest starring and also television starring roles as well after this. And this was one of her very first early roles.
Well, a really fascinating cast.
Yes. Yes. Let's do our poetry. Right. We've digressed so much about casting.
Yes.
But we haven't even given our poetry synopsis.
Let's synopsize this. My haiku for Favorite Son, Star Trek Voyager Season 3. Is Harry human? Seduced for reproduction. Must escape, ladies. There you go.
I just like the way you said it. Ladies must escape. Ladies. Love it. That's a wonderful
That's my haiku. Yeah. It's
that's kind brilliant. Of captures. Okay. Thank it does you. Capture it very well. Thank you for your haiku. All right. Here we go. My limerick for Favorite Son.
Yes.
Okay. An urge to return home takes over Harry. Teresia welcomes him. He's legendary. It's all one big ruse. His life he might lose. Beamed out real quick, so there's no need to marry.
It was close. They had you surrounded.
They did. They did,
but you got beamed out. So we're going through a trinary star system. Mm-hmm. Trinary means three. Three stars in the star system. And Chakotay wants to mark this, you know, for a map that we're building as we head back to the Alpha Quadrant.
Yes.
And Harry's like, have we been here before? He's like, have we passed through here? Tuvok says a line that I love. Thank you, Lisa Klink. You know, Harry's like, hey, this seems familiar. We've been here.
Why don't I say it? I'll say it. I'll be Harry and you'll be Tuvok. Okay, here we go. Didn't we already pass a trinary system like this?
Perhaps it's a paradoxical state dependent associative phenomenon. Harry goes, what?
Captain and then Janeway goes, deja vu.
In other words, deja vu. Yeah, a paradoxical state dependent associative phenomenon.
That's a tongue twister. Oh my God, it's so Vulcan.
He said it perfectly.
Yes, he did.
A paradoxical state dependent associative phenomenon.
Let me try my
it's hard.
I'm very impressed that you actually were able to regurgitate that. Let me see if I can even possibly do this. Tuvok. Perhaps you're experiencing a paradoxical state-dependent associated phenomenon. Oh,
that's it. Bam. Nice.
Thank you. Thank you.
So deja vu. There's a ship approaching. Mm-hmm. Doesn't seem to be a threat.
Nope.
Tuvok says shields are down. No weapons are armed or anything. Mm-hmm. But Harry goes, that ship's going to fire. What? What is wrong with you, dude? Harry transfers the weapon systems to his station. And he fires at the ship who was not a threat at all.
No. And I must add at this point that we are introduced to this captain and he says, hello, I am Albin. I'm captain of the Narada. And I sat there and I said, why does that sound so familiar? I went online to look around and I found out that Narada is the same name as the futuristic Romulan ship in J.J. Abrams' 2009 reboot of the Star Trek film franchise.
Oh, wow.
This is, yes, so this ship that comes out and they are the antagonists led by the Romulan Nero, they're the ones that start off this whole crazy, you know, story of the 2009 film franchise reboot.
Interesting.
And
Narada.
It's the same name.
This name was had been used before.
I think it was in the subconscious of Orci and Kurtzman. So Kurtzman and Orci wrote that script, right?
Yeah.
And they are Star Trek fans. So it would be, it wouldn't be out of the, you know, realm of possibility that they were watching this Voyager episode and it got embedded in their brain, that name. And they named that Romulan ship Narada, the same name.
Okay, so here we go. Harry's fired at this friendly ship. Mm-hmm. And now we're going to Red Alert.
Mm-hmm.
And we come back from the credits and we're in the middle of a battle. And I got to say, Marvin Rush did a great job of these battle scenes. The sparks felt bigger than usual.
He did.
The flashes, the sparks, the energy of that fight was just great. I love Chakotay jumping over a railing to go.
I am shocked. I am so shocked they let him do that. I'm like, really? They let him do that? Because as easy as it looks, it can be, that could be a nightmare, well, or it could be a disaster.
It's up a level,
it could
from be, where he was down below. He had to step on the console, I guess.
Or the back of the, something. I don't know. He stepped on something chair, and hopped over, right?
And then hopped over. And then they fired a big sparks and nitrogen.
While he was doing that.
While he jumped. It was a cool moment. It was very energetic. I thought Marvin did a great job of all this. And I remembered when I saw this liquid nitrogen, the smoke, these bursts of steam that come out of the ceiling and stuff.
Yeah.
I remembered how cold that could be sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because they use liquid nitrogen and they turn it on and blast it out for a second. Liquid nitrogen is like, I don't know, minus 100.
Minus something. Very cold. Yeah. And did you notice, or did you make note that Harry Kim, within a span of 3 minutes, he's relieved of duty and then suspended from duty as well. So I think that's probably a record in Starfleet to be relieved of duty and have a suspension.
You did really good, dude.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Well, she says, why?
Yeah.
And then Harry says, there was a Tetrion surge.
That's right.
And Tuvok is like, well, that doesn't mean that they were
going to fire on us.
Fire on us. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you've got a little head injury there, too. You must have taken a hit, because she says, the very last line of that moment is, she goes, go down to sickbay, have the doctor take a look at that cut. And she's like, snaps at you. She's like,
snapped at me.
She was saying, you should go take care of yourself. She's saying a sweet thing, but she's pissed off.
Yeah, she's so mad. I mean, the look that she gave me when I took over control and started firing on them, that first look that she gives me before I'm relieved of duty is the look of death. It literally is the look of death. Like, what the heck are you doing?
We go down to sick bay.
Oh, well, before you jump into that, there is, while this is happening, there is that quick jump to engineering where the plasma conduit explodes. That happens before Harry leaves for sick bay. So B'Elanna's injured.
We see her take a hit, big sparks and liquid nitrogen, and she drops down below frame.
Yes.
When when Harry's relieved and leaves the bridge, we go down to sick bay and B'Elanna looks bad. She is a mess. Mm. Plasma burns all over her face and her neck, hands, and she's unconscious and almost dies.
And Harry's upset.
they finally bring her back.
Mm-hmm.
And then Kes goes over. Kes and the doctor work on B'Elanna, bring her back. She looks horrible. Mm-hmm. Kes goes over to Harry and he feels really bad. He's so confused. He's like, I feel so bad about this. And Kes uses this cool handheld tool on you to scan
Dermal regenerator.
Dermal regenerator. Mm-hmm. But she's using that thing, and we didn't normally do VisiFX kind of lasers, but they did.
They did on that one. Yeah.
Usually it was just a light. It was a prop with a light or something.
Right.
That was kind of cool.
Well, the note I wrote down here was that Kes touches Harry's face so gently. Like when she's trying to, she kind of touches his chin. And I kept thinking, why didn't Kes and Harry hook up? Why wasn't that a couple? Because she's no longer with Neelix.
You had plenty of hookups in this episode. I think you should not get so greedy, because you had lots of hookups.
There's my note is that there's that very gentle touch that she has.
She's very
good bedside manner. And
gentle with everybody.
And I'm done getting treated and I walk out and there we have the guard waiting for me. That's Steve is waiting for me. And I just want to say, by the way, that Steve did a pretty good job of nonverbal acting when he had to take me to sick bay. When he had to escort me to sick bay, he gave me that, because I gave him that look like, really? And then he gave me that look back, which was like, sorry. He gave me that look, which was great, because typically with background actors, they don't have that extra the extra zhuzh in their acting, right? But he put it in there. So I want to compliment Steve for getting the job done.
We find Harry sleeping, resting after he's had some dermal regeneration. And he's in his room, and then he starts to have a dream. And I made a note that I thought Marvin did a great job of this dream with the camera floating and moving and the wide lenses. I thought it was very smart choices all around.
That is my note as well. Towards the end, I said every dream sequence that Marvin shot looked great.
Yep.
My question to you was, how do they change the effect of the voice in the dream sequence where it sounds more, I don't know, echoey or whatever they're doing? What is that? I mean, what are they doing?
That would
exactly?
be in the mix. That would be okay. after, just in the mixing stage. So,
in post-production nothing, at some point,
yeah,
right?
All post-production, they would add some reverb or some something to that.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is in this dream. This is where your mom appears.
Yep.
And at first, she was talking, and I looked at it was over the back of your head. I thought it was you for a minute. And I'm like, God, he looks so young. And then it cut around and it was a kid.
Yeah.
With what
a
looked like
Harry.
Chicken pox to yeah. me.
The Mendocin pox is
yeah,
what it's referred to
Mendocin
later.
Or Mendocin pox. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they're rare. And I guess you had them. Harry had had them before.
Yeah.
And they were recurring. And that's very strange.
Yes.
We find that out in sickbay.
By the way, that young kid that they cast to be me looks nothing like me as a kid.
I know. I thought the same thing. It didn't bother me, though. It was a dream. Like, none of it bothered me. I thought it was very cool.
It bothered me. I'm so sorry to if you are the kid that played me as young and you're listening to this. Oh, by the way, can I just please share you this? This story is very funny. I was in LA probably 3 days ago and I ordered DoorDash or something like that.
Right.
And so as the delivery guy comes up and he hands me the food, I go, thank you so much. So I'm walking away and the guy goes, wait a minute, you Harry Kim on Voyager? And I was like, yeah, well, why? And I'm wearing a mask. He's wearing a mask. He goes, I came this close to being your stand-in.
Oh, wow.
And I was That's like, funny. And I went, and I looked at him. I went, wait a minute, is your name Mike? And he goes like, you remember my name after 2.5 decades for the guy who almost, and I do remember Jerry Fleck said, Garrett, can you come into the set? Can you come in the set? We've got a couple of guys, or I thought it was three guys, but. Right. Mike said it was two. And I want you to take a look and stand next to these guys. We want to see, you know, who we want to pick as your new stand in. And he didn't get it. It was the other guy that got it, you know? But still, after all this time, and how random is that? The one food delivery guy happens to be the guy that almost was my stand in. That was just absolutely nuts. Yeah. All right. Back to the dream. So I have Mendocin pox, and then all of a sudden, Harry wakes up from this nightmare. Oh, and the best part of that dream is my mother suspends me at the end of the dream,
I'm suspending
right?
you from duty. And you go, Mom?
Huh?
Yeah.
Mom? Mom? Which is exactly how I say mom to my mom. Yeah. And then I wake up and I go to this bathroom area, right? Where you see this cool, I remember filming this thinking, this is the coolest sink. And I kept thinking, I want to design a sink like this for my own home.
It was a cool sink. The lights came on automatically.
Water comes out, super cool. And that's when I see the big rash in the mirror, which really looks like a trill marking. You know what I'm saying?
It is
very
much.
Trill-like. Yeah.
Yeah. So you go down to sick bay and that's where you've got this rash and the doctor tells you it's Mendocin pox. And it's rare, and that it's strange that it would be recurring.
Mm-hmm.
And he also explains, well, you explain the dream, and he says, well, maybe the dream is coming from these Mendocin pox, that it's upsetting your system somehow. He goes, but that's unusual. Like, usually dreams aren't connected. I've never seen it connected really to, you know, physical illness like that, but maybe.
And Harry's concerned that there might be psychological effects. So he's asking the doctor, is this possible? And the doctor says he didn't see anything, but he'll run a closer analysis. And that's when Torres wakes up.
She's regaining consciousness. Mm. And by the way, she wakes up. Last time we saw her, she looked like the Walking Dead. Like, her face was burned. Her hair's a mess. She's a disaster. And then she wakes up and she's kind of got this rested smile. Her hair is perfect. She looks like she just went through like a makeover works. It was unbelievable.
So she went from zombie Torres to waking up in a bed and breakfast.
Yes.
Is essentially what happens. Yes. She's very sore.
She's sore and tired. You guys talk. She says that you're cute. She kind of flirts with you.
I know. See, she says.
She calls you like a speckled targ.
Well, she said, well, first of all, she says, what happened to your face? Which is kind of a funny line, you know? And then she's like, well, it's kind of cute. Makes you look like a speckled targ. That's a flirtation, I think.
Yes.
And she gives me another nickname when she leaves, when I leave.
See you later, Spot.
Yes. Yes. I got Starfleet Spot. And I got Spot. I got two S nicknames from Torres. Whereas you have zero, sir.
I have zero.
Tom Paris has zero nicknames.
She was definitely flirting with you.
Thank you. Okay. All right.
It could have been because I noticed as you were talking to her, your hair was very poofy.
Oh my gosh. Okay. We've been talking.
Big hair.
Can I just say, we've been talking. Yes. We've been talking about the trilogy of terror. This is the trilogy of big hair episodes. Like every one of these three episodes, Harry's hair has been extra poofy.
It was very big.
Extra voluminous hair. Yeah, it's a cute scene. It's a really cute scene. Harry feels horrible.
He goes off to the captain's office. He goes to the ready room. Mm. He walks in, and you basically confess. You take full responsibility.
Yes.
And it's like super formal. And you come in. Mm-hmm. It's like, Captain, sir.
Yeah.
It's my fault. I mean, that's not your line, but that was the attitude. It was like, Captain, sir, I take responsibility. my fault.
I like your lines.
All the responsibility that there is. Just me.
No, I like your lines better. Captain, sir, it's my fault. That's it. Just ending it there.
Yeah. It was like that. And then she goes, relax, Ensign. They actually were firing.
They were charging their weapons.
They were charging their weapons. Mm-hmm. And she's like, how did you know that? Like, we had to do all this analysis to figure it out. And you just kind of knew it.
Yeah.
And I, again, noticed big hair. You had very big hair.
Big hair.
And while you guys are talking, you're like, I don't know. I just I did. And Tuvok comes in and goes, three more Nassari.
Yeah.
Nassari ships are approaching. Oh, brother. Out on the bridge we go.
Yeah. The issue, though, is we're not ready for anybody. We're only, the repairs aren't completed. We only have warp 3 maximum. We have no photon torpedoes. We only have phasers. And that's when Harry walks down to Khan, and I fully expected to see you, but I see Carrie sitting there.
Yeah, we can't outrun them because the ship's not back ready. And so we can't outrun them. But Harry goes, I know where we can go. Mm-hmm. And he goes down to he pulls up the star chart.
Yeah.
Carrie's there. I don't know what Tom's doing.
Yeah. What are you doing?
And he figures out a place to go. And he says, we'll be safe over by this planet. We'll be safe.
Let's go to this star system over here. Yeah. Yep.
He's like, I'm sure of it. And because he was right before, now they're like, and Tuvok even says, I don't think it would be wise for us to confront them. We probably should, instead of staying here and fighting, we should do what Harry's suggesting. So. Yeah. You're back at your station and we see that we are near this planet.
Yeah.
And Janeway says, we're going to make her stand here. And then Harry goes, Teresia.
See, now this is very important. There's two pronunciations of this. There's Teresia and Teresia. Teresia. There's some people that pronounce the S and pull it out longer. And there's some people don't.
Teresians
or Teresians. So there's two different pronunciations.
All right, I'm going to go with Teresia.
Okay, so Teresia, like Harry says that he knows it. It's on
he
the
says from. It's from the dream, he says. And we did see that in his dream. We see that it's the same planet.
Right.
Which, by the way, I love what Visifex did with his planet. It had a lot of dimension. It was very cool looking.
Mm-hmm.
And so we realized that there's another ship coming up from the planet.
A Teresian ship.
And it seems like it's going to fire at us. And they're arming their weapons, and it fires right past us and disables all three Nassari ships.
Yes, which was a little shocking. I thought, that's really easy to disable those other ships. Like, why couldn't we disable those guys? The Teresian ship is super powerful, evidently, which then will play into a comment that I will have later towards the end of the episode, which contradicts this power that they have displayed.
They seem to have a lot of power.
They seem to here, yes. Okay.
So it disables all three Nassari ships. This lady pops on board, looking very sweet.
We didn't talk about her. Yes, Deborah May. Deborah May plays Lyris, the Teresian elder, who pops on screen. And she looks so much like Laurie Holden. Do you know Laurie Holden, the actress?
No.
She played Andrea on the early seasons of Walking Dead. So Deborah May looks like an older version of Laurie Holden. That's the first. That's the note that I made right here.
Well, she pops up. Mm-hmm. She looks around and then she goes, there you are. Mm-hmm. Basically, she tells you, you're Teresian. Welcome home.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're like, what?
Dun, dun,
what
dun.
What? All right. So here we go, getting into the creepy parts.
Yep.
Beam down to the planet.
The Teresian welcome hall. All right. I'm calling it the welcome hall. Okay.
Great. And it's all girls.
It's all.
Lots of young girls. And Patrick Fabian.
And Patrick Fabian, yes. And another Teresian has returned. And there's a whole ceremony, practically. They're so happy.
Whole ceremony.
Kristanna Loken comes up and kisses me square on the lips. So,
and they're all
Malia,
touching. Everybody's like touching.
Carrie's stroking my hair.
They're all stroking. It's the whole scene. You're getting stroked by these three ladies. And Patrick Fabian's got a couple stroking him. And it's like, it just, I got to say, and it's only going to get worse. So I just got to be honest right now.
Okay.
All of this
stroking,
constant like sexualization made me uncomfortable.
Mm.
I don't know.
I kind of want to talk to Marv about this stuff. You know?
I don't know how much was directorial. I don't know how much was scripted. That's, I don't know how much
I'm
was
just
actor.
Curious. Yeah.
But it was like immediately in this scene, I'm like, oh, this is creepy. But then it just, like, that's only the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it continues. So I just got to say up front, for me, I get the story that we were trying to tell, but I wish it didn't involve so many scenes with that business going on, because it was very distracting. It was very off-putting because it felt like I was invading as an audience member a very private or personal kind of thing, whereas it took me away from story. Anyway.
Well, at least they had, you know, at least Harry reacts to that, the stroking by Eliane, right? So Eliane, I get the kiss from Malia, and I'm like, whoa. And then I get stroked on the cheek by Eliane, which I then kind of push away. So there is that reaction, which would be a genuine reaction to anyone just invading your personal space, right?
Yeah.
But my reaction,
I wish there had been some of that in the story.
There wasn't enough reaction to her kissing me either in the very beginning. I should have been like, whoa, like that's a huge, like people just don't. Well, I take that back. There is one person who does that. The actress who worked on Chuck.
Linda Hamilton.
Yes, Linda Hamilton is the only human being that I met her. She kissed me on the lips when she first met me. So that is the only person that's like that.
I love Linda.
She's Teresian. Linda's Teresian.
But she doesn't stroke you.
No, she doesn't stroke me. She just kisses
like
you.
The one kiss. The and one then kiss done. And that's She's it. Very European that way. So we find out in this scene that your instincts, your DNA has been encoded with these Teresian genes, and that you have this desire. That's what's been going on.
Yes, but I also, they're telling me that Harry was conceived in Teresia, then put in, the embryo was put into stasis. The embryo was put in stasis, and then it travels with the messenger or whoever, the courier, which is essentially the father, supposedly, right? Across the galaxy, and then implanted in unsuspecting wombs. And so my mother's womb was implanted with this Teresian embryo, which I then, I guess because of their genetics are so advanced that they're able to hide this so that I grow up looking human, but gradually as I get closer to the planet Teresia, the genes activate and they become the dominant genes and push aside the human genes.
The doctor kind of says, well, this must be a recessive gene. And it's just now sort of emerging.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We see Paris there.
Your first line is when, okay, so Kelly Kirkland, who plays Rinna, hands me a drink. And I naturally bring my hand up to her side of her cheek to say thank you, right? And that's when you go, Harry. And that's your first line. Almost halfway through the episode, you've got a line, finally. And it's one word. It's my name. Okay.
Well, okay. So then a few moments later, the party is continuing, and we see Paris go over to try to, you know, make small talk with one of these Teresian young girls, and he is totally dismissed.
Just shut down.
She walks right over to Shutdown, walks right over to Harry, and Paris continues to watch from the deep background.
Best. I was like, you were such a third wheel in all of this whole scene where we're down on the Teresian planet. You're awesome. The third wheel.
I loved it. It was so funny.
So funny.
Everybody's transporting back, but Harry says, no, I think I want to stay. I want to stay. Like,
yeah. And you find out though, Robbie, you find out from Taemin, you have a side conversation with Taemin that, because you ask him, is this the standard welcome home reception? And Taemin's like, well, for males, yes, because they're so rare. The Teresian population is 90% female. So this is where we learn the actual stats, which may not even be true. You know,
who knows?
Yeah. Who knows?
Well, so Harry wants to stay. So we go back and we're in sick bay now, and the doctor does confirm that there are fragments of his DNA that have been recessive that are now becoming dominant. That is true. Mm-hmm. We also talk to the Nasari. They consider Harry, if he is Teresian, they consider him the enemy. They basically say, we'll agree to this, you know, peace situation. We're not going to fight you anymore.
Right.
Janeway doesn't want to fight because the ship is still being repaired from the big battle in that opening scene. Mm-hmm. But they consider Harry the enemy. And he says, if you try to take Harry out of here, put him back on your ship, then we'll consider you have an enemy on board and we will fire at all enemies. And Tuvok even says something like, well, maybe if Harry stays here, you know, that may not be a bad thing, which I thought was... Wow, Tuvok.
Thanks, Tuvok. Yeah. But he also kind of warns Janeway. He says, we have no conflict with you, and just you should just forget about your crewmen, because no one who comes home to Teresia ever leaves. They just head back to... So this is literally this warning, sort of like, done. You know, this mysterious kind of dark side of the Teresians starts to come out from this story from Albin, the Nasari captain. But you did skip one welcome hall scene right before this.
Oh, yes, they did. Yeah. Yes.
This is a big scene. And I want to talk about this now, because this is probably the only time in 7 years that I did not have my lines down.
Really?
Oh, my God. I remember coming onto set, and that was a long scene. I mean, that was probably 6 or 7 pages of dialogue, I think. And I didn't have anything ready. And I remember Marvin was so excited about the day. And this was the first scene up that day. And Marvin was so jazzed and happy to be filming. And I didn't have the heart to tell him, I don't know any of these lines, like none of them. And I was learning them on the fly, and I barely got them out. So this is the scene where Taemin and I are sitting there, and he's giving me his backstory about how he had the urge to explore, and he was, you know, he went with the Merchant Marines or whatever. And I tell him, well, I always had the urge to explore too. And he talks about Teresian traits of music and.
Yeah, Teresian traits may come out like music, and you go, well, that makes sense. I play a clarinet. So it's all making sense.
Yes. And
they try to give you a mood enhancer.
Well, this is what I wrote down. So Kelly Kirkland, so Rinna and Kristanna Loken, who plays, and I don't know why Kristanna has an S in her name on the credits, Kristanna S. Loken. You usually add a middle name or a middle initial when you have a very common name, like Bob Smith, right? But when you're Kristanna Loken, I have to ask her why she's doing that. I sent her a text, by the way, Robbie, so hopefully she'll respond to me on that one. But they enter... Those two enter with what looks like a doorstop. I was like, that's a doorstop. But evidently, that's what they use to inject this mild mood enhancer with no side effects, according to Taemin. I love that part. No side effects.
They're like, everyone wants you to be happy.
Yeah, just chill. Yourself. Exactly.
And you're like, no, I think I'll pass.
Yeah.
We also learned in the scene that you were a miracle child, that your parents tried a long time to have a child. And your self-esteem or your confidence here is not great, because we see Harry says, you know, I don't see what's so special about me, you know, self-deprecating. Yeah. I didn't deserve that kind of devotion.
Right.
Yeah. And Taemin is saying, you know, imagine that you've been special your whole life. Like, how does that feel? Mm-hmm. You know, you're not average. You're very special. Look, you're Teresian. That's what's been going on. You were a miracle. So yeah, big scene, interesting. Mm-hmm. And then who comes over to give you a massage?
That's Eliane. Eliane's the one, Carrie Shane's character. She comes over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she says, let me relax your muscles for you.
I'm getting
uncomfortable again.
There's a lot of just very...
Your uniform is so restrictive. Oh.
The dialogue. Oh my. There's so much innuendo going on. It's It's overkill. It's too much.
I just... It was the stroking and the touching and the massages and the innuendo. It was like bananas on bananas.
Yeah,
it was a lot. Okay, let's get beyond the stroking and touching.
After we find out that no one comes home to Teresia and ever leaves, this is when Janeway is, you know, now really kind of worried. She's thinking, well, what is all this all about? So she decides to go back to Teresia. Voyager heads back to Teresia.
Well, one thing happens in this scene on the bridge.
Yeah.
First of all, I think Albin, that alien, he looks like he's in Cats the Musical. I gotta say that makeup, something about it. It just looked like he was Mistopheles or one of those, you know, Cats the Musical characters. And he says, no one who comes home to Teresia ever leaves. Mm-hmm. He says that there's rumors about these people. She says, I'm not interested in rumors. I just want the facts.
Yeah.
And, they hang up, and then Chakotay says, I wonder if those rumors are true.
Mm.
Now, when someone just says there's rumors, I mean, Albin didn't say like, oh, there's rumors that they kill everybody, or there's rumors that this, he just said there's rumors. And then Chakotay's like, I wonder if those rumors are true. Mm. I'm like, what? Mm. Don't you need to know what the rumors are before you want to wonder if they're true?
Yeah.
Anyway, it was a strange exchange to me.
Okay. Now we head back to Teresia, and we detect a high-density Polaron grid is now surrounding Teresia, which wasn't there before.
Blocking the surface. They're blocking communication.
Yep, they can't hail them.
Transport. Mm-mm. We can't do anything.
Nothing. We jump down to the Teresian welcome hall, where we see Taman's joining ceremony. It's a candle-lit ceremony. The mantra that is chanted is Amal Ulat, let us be joined. And so now this is basically his marriage ceremony. And also from that earlier scene where we see Taman and Harry chatting, we learn that he's taking not one, not two, but three wives. And this is his joining ceremony to his three wives. Kim comes up.
This was very, very coolly, you know, very creatively shot and staged. Yeah, just the circle stuff going on. I thought the gong, when they did the little gong, it was a little lame. I wish the gong sound or something, or the gong could have been cooler.
More impressive. Yeah.
Yeah. It was kind of like bing.
Yeah.
Bling. 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 Blink. I don't know. It was not much of a ceremony and then blink.
It's like if there's a cartoon gun and instead of making a bang, it goes ding like that. Yeah, it was like really just minimal, right? Okay.
But the rest of it was cool. The sticks banging, and the circling, and the face painting, and the tiny little ribbon over his blindfold, which of course it doesn't really blindfold him. It was like a ribbon. It was like a tiny skinny blindfold.
Yes. So Harry, after the ceremony is over, he walks over to Eliane and he asks her, hey, why did they tie him up like that? And she says it's tradition, you know? And then she says, do you find it exciting? And this is where it got uncomfortable for me. And I'm, because it's very, it's so much innuendo.
Like,
and
I'm like, what? Well, I didn't
think of it that way. A little bit of tying people up there. A little bondage action. It was very, it was like, what? I can't believe those lines are in there, but they were in there.
Well, I think a lot of these lines, you know, could be played a lot of different ways. I just think not that I'm saying how they should have or could have would have been played, but for everybody, whether it was the Teresian women or for Harry or for Patrick Fabian or whoever, it just felt like bananas on bananas. Like if the words are being innuendo-y, then probably Marvin should have directed things a little less, you know, sexualized or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, you know, just play against it or play it lighter or something. Cause I think the story would have still worked. And some of those kind of cringe moments of like, oh, this is uncomfortable. And why are we going there? Like it's Star Trek. It's not, It's not like, you know, Red Shoe Diaries After Dark or whatever.
Yeah.
No, it just started feeling like, what show are we watching?
Oh, I love it.
Anyway, Harry tries to reach Voyager, but yeah, he doesn't get anything.
No response.
Yeah.
But Lyra says, hey, you're welcome to stay the night. So he does. He does stay the night. Now we're in the Voyager corridor. Chakotay and Janeway are discussing how to bypass the Tyrrhesian defenses. Like, what are we going to do? And then we jump to sickbay, which is kind of weird. Why were they walking to sickbay in the first place? That was kind of weird because they just walked right in there. And the doctor is like, oh, hey, I was about to tell you, get a hold of you. The Tyrrhesian genetic fragments were implanted basically by a retrovirus.
Yep.
Harry isn't Tyrrhesian.
Yeah, he's not Tyrrhesian. And no, this was a retrovirus.
Nope.
And the doctor in the scene, Bob Fargo, is
proud of himself.
Very proud, exactly what I wrote down.
Yeah.
He's like, I figured it out.
Yeah, yeah.
I know what it is. I've looked in the transporter logs.
Yeah.
And he was very happy, very excited. Yeah, oh, he looked in the transporter logs and found that he might have been infected on this away mission. Chakotay remembers that Harry had sort of wandered off by himself.
That's right.
And so they figured this out. They figured out the scam. So our heroes know what's happening to Harry, but Harry doesn't know what's happening.
No. Okay, so we jump back down to now Tyrrhesian guest quarters.
Yes.
And Eliane is basically putting Harry to bed.
Yes.
She says, Akari Asan, which means pleasant dreams. And then she brings over this essence of Rika flowers and puts this stuff on Harry.
She says pleasant dreams. And then Harry's like, aren't you going to tuck me in?
Oh, right.
Yeah. Yes.
I did skip over that.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Like, Harry is like fishing here. Like, yeah. it's like really, like they've been caressing you and kissing you, and now like really tuck me in. Okay. And she brings this oil over. Close your eyes. There's lots of kissing, way too much kissing. Two ladies, I got very uncomfortable. Choose me. No, choose me. And choose one more. There's got to be three. And then Harry's
there's a dream sequence.
Yes, and it all felt like a dream to me. I didn't even know where the dream stopped and the creepiness began.
Now, when we're in the guest quarters and the dream sequence happens, I've always talked to people or relayed this story. At conventions, I've talked about how in my dream sequence, I kiss the brunette and then I kiss the blonde and then I kiss the African-American girl. And no, I remembered it incorrectly. I only kiss Rinna and Eliane. So I'm kissing the brunette, Carrie Shane, and Kelly Kirkland, the African-American actress. That's it. Yeah. That's the only, there's no, the only kissing of Malia happens in the very beginning when I arrive on the planet and the welcome party, she kisses me on the lips that we talked about earlier, and that's it. And I say that in one scene, that is probably the most kissing any Asian actor has had in Hollywood of Asian male actor.
Kissing.
Yeah,
it's,
but
as I've said before, it's too much kissing.
Yes, but Robbie, at that point in time in 1997, I could count on one hand how many times Hollywood has allowed an Asian male to kiss anybody.
Yeah, that's true. I think, look, having you as an Asian American actor in a story about women desiring you, or you know, this female planet desiring you as a human, just a human, whether you're Asian or, I think having a story about that is great. And for all the reasons you said, I think it's breaking down stereotypes and having your character have a love story of sorts and how, you know, and have this attraction. Sure. It's not about, to me, it's not the fact that you're Asian or whatever race you may be. It's just that the story, it's as a human thing. It's like having two or three women kissing or caressing, it just starts to feel, if it's protracted, it's too much. It's like, I get this, I get what you're doing. And it's just, now it feels exploitive in some way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whether it's a white person, an Asian person, a black person, indigenous person, whatever person, to me, my issue isn't about that at all.
Yeah.
There's actually great value in the fact that it's about Harry, I think. So that's wonderful. You're right. And I appreciate you bringing that up.
Yeah.
But the part that I struggle with as I watch this episode was, it's too cringeworthy that these moments go on and on sort of exploitively. Like, the caressing and the kissing.
I remembered this scene incorrectly. I thought all three ladies were in it and it was just two.
But that's the thing. It's like literally saying like, oh, I thought I was kissing three women and not two. It's like, dude.
Okay, fine.
It's uncomfortable.
I hear you. Like, I hear you. And but my point is that, yes, it's overkill, but the desert that has been Asian actors with any females, it's been a desert in Hollywood. So having this overkill was fine in my books because Asian guys need that image to show people that they can be masculine as well.
From that perspective, I hear you. I just don't know if overkill is the solution to that problem.
Right. I hear you.
That's what I would say does overkill really help the cause? Is that like putting an admirable, you know, like normalizing spin on it? Or is it just another hurdle for people to go away?
I hear you. Yep.
I don't know. It's to me that was my biggest issue in this was the physicality and the over sexualizing. Mm-hmm. Because I get that there's a planet where they need to bring in men to reproduce, mm-hmm. but does it need to be a planet that it feels like an orgy and, you know, that's just there to satisfy male needs? Like mm-hmm. I don't think that was necessary.
I hear your point. And now the interesting note here I'm going to share with everybody is that the entire 7 days of filming this episode, it was just the guest star gals and myself pretty much. But on the day that we had the kissing, because all the kissing scenes were scheduled for the same day, all three boyfriends of these three actresses showed up. They all showed up on set and they were all there watching while we were filming the kissing scenes. And I thought, this is hilarious. This is the only day that they show up.
Well, that's what I mean. The reason they showed up is because they probably heard from their girlfriends or partners that this was extremely sexualized, you know, group kissing scene or whatever. I remember once directing an episode of Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce, and there was a scene where one of the characters goes to this sort of wild party where everybody takes MDMA and they start there's a lot of
stroking.
Everybody starts kissing everybody. We had hired some people who had agreed to as background people to do like, to have a woman kind of kissing one man and then turning to another and kissing. And when we got there, she was just like, I don't want to kiss two people. Like, I don't feel comfortable. I know I said I did. Yeah. And so I changed it. I was like, you know what? We can tell this story without you having to do that. And so I had her, she agreed to kiss one of them and then sort of just embrace the other one. And so we told the story of, oh, there was these people who are using drugs and becoming very loose sexually. That was the story we needed to tell, but I wanted the actors to feel comfortable and I didn't feel like I needed to exploit these background actors in any way. I guess I just feel like this one needed much more delicate kind of touch in all areas because it was, you know, that's why the boyfriend showed up. Like, why do you think they showed up, dude? Because they're not comfortable. Because everybody's kind of like knows. But whatever.
Yeah. Okay.
I get it. All right. So anyway, so there's this kissing.
Yeah.
You know, this is the big moment where, you got to kiss the two women, and they say you need to pick a third, and please choose me.
Yeah. Or I wake up though. I'm kissing them in the dream, and I wake up, and they're next to me, which is very odd. This is when Harry first realizes there's something afoot. There's something very, very strange here. Why are they in my bed like this? They're trying to convince him to stay. You need to select me as a wife. And no, select both of us as a wife. Then you only need to find one more wife. Yeah. And then, you know, as I'm going, trying to get out of there.
No, I'm not into this. I'm not into this. They start getting angry.
They do get angry. Yeah. And as
they say, you have a responsibility to Teresia. Like they're kind of scolding you a bit.
Yes.
So
clearly. The only thing that's unclear is when Rinna, Kelly Kirkland's character, comes up and gives me that kiss and I'm not really responsive to it, you know?
Yeah.
And then I sort of like get into it. There needs to be, I don't know how you're supposed to show it, because there is that one moment where Harry basically realizes I'm getting away. And then he feels, oh my gosh, I need to do something to distract them, you know? And so let me play along with their game.
Yeah, he
so there's
plays
nothing,
along.
Right. But there's no image. There's no shot of me showing the recognition. I guess it's implied, so everyone knows that I'm playing along now.
I don't think people are supposed to know. I think to me in the story, it's supposed to feel like, oh God, no, Harry's gonna.
He's gonna. Okay. Gonna so they're not to supposed this. To. Okay.
So he seems to agree, but then as soon as you start tying
them
up, we know that that's not normal Harry.
Right.
And we, you know, as an audience, I think we realize, oh, this is part of his plan. He's pretending to be into this. It's like, come on, you know, didn't you want to do this before? Like, let me tie you up.
Yeah.
And then,
and this scene though, remember we talked about this earlier. I said, there's one scene that I felt very awkward about. It's this scene here. Because the blocking in this was just really, it was complicated. It wasn't, you know, I don't feel that it was very organic. And then when I had to tie them up, it was like, wait a minute, you don't have any, where's the rope? They're like, oh no, you're just going to use these little ribbons that strips. They have, strip. Yeah. But the thing is, I tore that one strip apart so easily. And then I'm going to tie her up with that same strip that I just pulled apart. Like it was tissue paper. How's that going to work? So there's some holes in the script here. Like there wasn't really any real rope around per se, you know what I'm saying? For me to use. So that's why the blocking felt weird. The props using the ribbon, that gauze or whatever that was very awkward to me. So I just, you know, my main recollection of this episode is that yes, I kissed a bunch of women, but more importantly, this scene really rubbed me the wrong way in terms of it just didn't flow. It didn't flow that well. It looked okay, but
I tell you what, there was a few things that didn't like, you know, once the girls start going, you know, what are you up to?
Yeah.
And Rinna goes to untie.
Oh, she goes, what does she say? This is a, you're tricking us or something like that.
You're tricking us or something like that. And then she goes to untie her,
and knock her out,
come up and you grab a statue or something and you knock her out. And then you're like, sorry about that.
Yeah. The face I make, I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. I just felt like it was, why doesn't the other girl scream? Like, I felt like there were a bunch of things like the gauze and it didn't feel authentic to me.
Right.
It didn't feel like the stakes were as authentic or real as they would be.
Well, Eliane doesn't scream because I take some gauze and I wrap it around her mouth, which is supposedly going to stop her from screaming.
Yeah, but she could, like she can make, even
if that would
we
have
didn't
been...
explain why no one hears it, it would be an authentic thing you would do.
Yes.
And I wish that was there because as soon as it starts feeling, you know, not authentic, then I kind of get lost a little bit.
Yeah.
But anyway, you knock out Rinna, you take off, you're sneaking down the hall and you go to Taman's room and he is now a mummy. He is like-
He is a desiccated corpse is what-
He's a corpse.
Just Taman
looks
is.
Like he's, he looks like a mummy. I don't know how else to describe it. Like all of the life sucked out of him.
You know what he looked like? It looked like Keith Richards. From the Rolling Stones is what he kind of looked like Keith Richards. sorry, Keith Richards, if you're listening to this, but
Taman's wife comes in, who he just won
Malia.
His wives, Malia comes in and says things to you like, well, any father should be willing to sacrifice themselves for their children.
Right. Because my question is, what happened to him? And she's like, well, Taregians must nucleate a large number of cells to collect enough genetic material for conception. So it's not just sperm cells. It's like cells from the entire body.
That's why he looked like a mummy.
Yeah. And that's when she says any father should be willing to sacrifice himself for the sake of his children, for the continuation of his race. Two more Taregians enter. Harry basically hides and then throws Malia into them and runs out.
Okay? Yep.
We jump to the bridge. Janeway and Chakotay discuss breaking through the grid and beaming Harry aboard. They do clear the grid, but they cannot locate Harry. There's still some type of dampening field around the welcome hall or something.
Yep.
That's when we jump to the Taregian welcome hall. They're surrounding me. I do find one way out, but that is where Patty Tallman comes in and knocks me on my bum with her stick.
Basically, now the women are surrounding you. You've got a bit of a fight sequence. You've got a floor fight with one of them. Was that Patty Tallman?
That was Patty Tallman, I'm wrestling with the floor.
Yeah. Floor fight with Patty Tallman. Mm-hmm. Then two of them grab you. Some more come in. You like upchuck those guys and smack them in the face. Knock two ladies out.
Yeah, I'm not happy that I'm beating people, women down. I'm not happy about that. But that's what I do to get out of there, you know?
You have to. They're surrounding you. And they're
going to kill me.
They're going to kill you.
Yeah.
You know that. You're going to be the next mummy.
Yeah.
And just there's a cool shot overhead. Just as they're kind of stepping in and starting to close in on you, you start to beam out of that shot. And you were back. Yeah.
That's a weird shot, though, because I remember talking to Marv about that. I was like, okay, so you're going to be shooting this beam out sequence from above? He's like, yeah, it's going to be really cool. I'm like, okay, well then, do you want me to look up, I guess. And he's like, let's try that. So that's because if you see what during the beam out, I'm like, throw them off. And then you see the shot from above, the women surrounding me. And then I look up like that, like right up, like I'm looking up at Voyager or something. It was a little awkward. I mean, I guess it still plays.
Oh, I thought it played
great. You're not thinking about it. Yeah.
But I thought it played great.
But I just remember the discussion on set. I was a little.
Well, why are you looking out?
Yeah, I said, why am I doing this? Like, I'm trying to find, actors always trying to find their motivation. Like, why are we motivated to do this? You know, please explain this to me. And I felt like I was just getting an explanation that didn't really suffice in my book. I felt like, I don't buy that. But I did it. I still did it. I'm a team player, you know.
Well, I thought it was a cool shot. But yeah, there's no reason for you to look up. But, no. Except for the shot. But yeah. It didn't bump me.
It didn't bother you though, right? It didn't. Pull you out. Okay.
No.
All right. We're back on the bridge and the Teresian
ship is firing.
The Teresian patrol ship is firing on Voyager and they're giving us chase, right? And then we detect three Nassari vessels that are heading for us as well. So we're like, oh my gosh, we're gonna have to fight on two fronts. But they attack the Teresian ship instead and leave us alone. But why on earth is the Teresian ship that was so powerful before now so weak? Like for some reason they can't do anything and now they're kind of losing to the three Nassari ship, right? We flash to the mess hall and Harry's telling this story to Neelix about the Iliad, the Odyssey, right? About Odysseus being lured
story, yep.
And Neelix is into that and Harry basically talks about how there was something exciting about having a new identity, being more than young Ensign Kim. And Neelix says, I, for one, am glad to have young Ensign Kim back with us. And he squeezes my cheek. He squeezes Harry's cheek and makes a small sound. And he goes, eek, something like that. And I actually called Johnny up. And I called him up. I said, Johnny, did you add that in post, like in ADR and looping? And he's like, oh no, that would have been on set for sure. I definitely didn't add anything in looping. So I got that. And Johnny says hi to you, by the way. So.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
Yeah, so, I always like those little like Talaxian noises.
Talaxiisms. He really adds a lot of cool things in there. And I love that little boop, little sound in there, which was cute, right?
Yeah.
So then he leaves and I have a conversation with you. And I basically say that Harry says, boy, I wish I could be more bold and confident with women like you. And then Tom,
You want to be like me,
Tom?
You might have to spend some time in a penal colony.
Yeah, in a penal colony. And then, but before he says that, he bites his lower lip. And he says, since I've been on Voyager, I've been trying to be more like you. And now there's a moment for a split second, if you're watching as an audience member, you might be thinking there's going to be a kiss between Harry and Tom.
That's because everybody's been kissing you the whole episode.
I get that.
It's for any other reason. It's
but you
this
bite
episode.
Your when everyone bites their lip, it's sort of it's a sensual thing. So you bit your lip before you say, since I've been on Voyager, I've been trying to be more like you. And you kind of look at me with very,
maybe I was just thinking like, oh, that's nice that you said that. And, you know, I don't know.
I don't know, man. It looks like you give me goo-goo eyes. And then it cuts to me and it looks like I give you goo-goo eyes.
It's like I'm super charming.
I guess, but it looks like I give you goo-goo eyes right back. So it looks like I'm reciprocating your goo-goo eyes. And then right before, because the last thing you say is, since I've been in Voyager, I've been trying to be more like you. There's that really awkward moment of possible kiss between Tom and Harry. And then Harry breaks it up by saying, nah, you're not going to be more like me, kind of a thing. And we walk out and you say, you're my role model. You're reliable, hardworking, extremely punctual. Did I mention polite?
Yeah,
right. But the punctual part, I thought, okay, that's a stab.
Yes, that was a little jab.
That's a little bit of a jab from the writers who get a little
extremely punctual.
Yes. In dealing with some of my tardiness, that was a little bit of a jab, which is what I wrote down. So so you did not see a potential kiss between Tom and Harry?
I did not.
Okay. All right.
I did not, Garrett.
It just looked like that. But you're right. This entire episode was about everybody kissing, and kissing.
I think it was just
and
a theme.
It was
on
just
your
a
mind.
Theme
speaking
in my
of
head.
Themes, speaking of themes, I'll give you my theme.
Go with your theme.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
My theme, my takeaway, my lesson from this episode was pleasure can seduce you from seeing the truth. Mm-hmm. Too much pleasure can distract you from seeing the truth. That was what I took away from this.
Okay.
There was lot of distracting pleasure.
Hmm. Yeah. All right.
What'd you have? Any theme?
Yeah. I mean, my theme is, it's not an overall theme. It's not an overall lesson. It's a lesson that came from Kes, of all people, who we've talked about being very wise for her young age. Yeah. Kes, in the early sickbay scene, when Harry goes down to get his cut fixed, she basically says to him, Harry, you can't undo what's been done. So that is the lesson that I got from this episode, which is so true, because people sometimes they worry so much about something that just happened. And you know, the truth of the matter is, what's done is done. It's happened. You must move on. So really, the lesson that I got from this episode is that conversation from Kes is that you need to accept what happened and move forward and don't dwell on the past, right? Stay present. Stay present. Don't think about what just happened. Think about what's happening now. So that's my lesson.
Always good to stay present. Well, there you go. There's our recap and rewatch of Favorite Son. Scale of 1 to 10, what would you give this?
You answer first.
I'm going to give this a below average. I'm going to say the Trilogy of Terror is not far off for me. I'm going to give this a 4.
Whoa. That's like your lowest rating of any episode. I didn't even give Threshold a 4. So I'm hurt.
Really? It's not. I'm telling you, it's not you. It is not you. It's a weird amalgamation of script, performance, direction, dialogue, just editing, all of it. Everything just keeps adding on to the problem rather than blowing through, you know, making the things that would distanced me.
Yes.
Were only made worse by everyone, you know, by the whole group effort. I think if any one part of that had changed, it would have been better. Anyway.
I'm not going to give it a rating. I'm just going to say that this is my least favorite Harry-centric episode.
Oh, wow.
Okay. I'm just going to say that much. I will say that pre-pandemic, this is the episode that Dr. Mohammed Noor would show at Duke University during his spring break course. He would teach a spring break course, which lasted for basically a week for spring break. And he invited me down 2 years in a row where he showed this episode to his class and had me waiting in his office. And after the episode was over, he brought me into class and say, and here we have the actor who was in this episode to talk about his experiences on Star Trek. And so he, being a biology professor, he talks about the genetics that are talked about in this episode. So he uses this episode as a learning tool.
That's very cool. Well, it's like Threshold, you know, my famous well-hated episode is used at the... No,
that wasn't it. First Duty was used to teach there.
I knew there was something I was a part of that got used in the school.
At the Air Force Academy. At the Air Force Academy. Yes, yes. So this episode Dr. Noor uses in his class, which I thought was pretty cool. Yeah, so a couple years in a row I went out there and was the surprise guest there.
Nice.
Yeah. All right, well, that's our review. A Favorite Son. The Trilogy of Terror is now over. Everyone can sigh. I have it. Breathe a sigh of relief right now. Okay. Join us next week when Robbie and I review Before and After. And for all of our Patreon patrons, stay tuned for your bonus material. See ya.